Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Hutchcroft, photographer, freelancer, and curious question asker. Join me for half an hour each week while I sit down with inspiring photographers and pick their brains about growing their business, authentically connecting to their clients, and being a good human in this changing industry. If you're ready to take your photography hobby to the next level and turn it into an actual business, you're in the right place. If you want to hear real-life advice from professional photographers and start building the future of your dreams, don't go anywhere. Here we go. Cassidy Lynn is a podcast host, photography educator, wedding photographer, and general social media whiz. She's grown her business from the ground up on a steady diet of trial and error, refinement, and passion. Now she's in the flow with a foolproof social media strategy that connects her to her audience, supports her business, and grants her the freedom to travel the world doing what she loves. We've got Cassidy on the show today, and this episode, we're going to dive right into the heart of the beast that is social media. We cover so much, and literally everything we cover is gold. Cassidy shares social media tips that are helpful for everyone to help you share your work, connect to your people, and grow your business. We talk about the highs and lows of having a big following, how to carve out a healthy relationship with your phone, how to engage your audience and keep them engaged, and how to effectively funnel your energy into content that actually has an impact. No matter where you are on your photography journey, I have no doubt that you will find this podcast full to the brim with advice you can apply to your business today. So stay tuned. It's going to be a good one. So I'll just start with the first question. I usually like to begin these interviews with diving into how you got to photography and what your journey sort of looked like. I know that you are a wedding photographer and you also do podcasts and you also do education. A lot of people often see this sort of very like developed side of your professional life. And so I want to know what your first paid photo shoot was like.
My first paid photo shoot, the first thing that pops into my head was actually like my first paid wedding. My first paid photo shoot itself, I can't really pinpoint because I did like a lot of random stuff. But my first paid wedding definitely sticks out in my head. It was in Pennsylvania and I'm based in Michigan, which is about a 13-hour drive. I didn't charge travel. And they paid me like $800 to just shoot the ceremony. So I didn't even do the reception. I think it was literally like 4 or 3 hours of coverage because I barely got getting ready. It was literally just a ceremony and like portraits afterwards. It ended up being like a very good learning moment for me. Like, I think the photos turned out good, like good, not great, but I really had an opportunity to learn about travel fees, about just like dark ceremonies, because this ceremony was like the darkest thing I'd ever shot. So I learned a lot about like what gear to bring and stuff like that. But honestly, like, I think your first paid shoot is always like such a good learning opportunity. But I was so grateful for it. Like at the time, I was so incredibly grateful just to have the opportunity to capture someone's big life moment, like literally their wedding. Like, it was just a great opportunity for me. So I think it was a learning lesson, but also like, it was cool. And I don't think I would trade it for anything because I've learned so much just from that one wedding that I shot.
I mean, it sounds like, I feel like I would get there and be like, oh my God, it's so dark. Like, how am I going to make these photos look good? But then you kind of went on to pursue wedding photography as like your thing. Like, did you, I don't know, was this wedding the point where you're like, okay, I've fallen in love with weddings and this is what I want to do? Or like, why did you sort of decide that weddings was the direction that you wanted to go in?
I think I fell in love more with like documentary style candids. And I think weddings just ties really well into that. Like, I think I fell in love with the event side of photography, but also the portraits, and then discovered that weddings were like the perfect in between of both of those things. And I think like over time, like once I got my first wedding, it was kind of a little bit like a snowball. It was like a friend of a friend had heard that I was shooting weddings, and like sister-in-law's sister, you know, was getting married. So I was getting like these random wedding bookings, and I saw it more as like a cool business opportunity. Like, business was just falling into my lap. Like, I was getting better, and I did love what I was shooting too. So I was like, you know what? This is what I'm going to try to pursue. At the time, I was doing part-time photography for a nonprofit and then doing part-time weddings. So it definitely wasn't like right away, like I'm full sending into wedding photography. It was definitely like a slow progression, but I think I knew once I started shooting events and shooting portraits that like weddings was like the perfect in between for me.
That's so amazing that it kind of like the first one sort of just fell into your lap.
Yeah, it was very strange. Like I didn't ask for it. I wasn't advertising it. It just was like, my friend was like, I think you could do this. My friend's getting married. I think you could do it. Do you want to? And I was like, sure. And then that was it.
That's so amazing. And so I'm curious about like having done weddings for a little while and like sort of, as you said, you really love events, you really love portraits. Like what's another part of photography that you feel super passionate about?
I literally love social media. It's like social media / marketing. So I actually have a business degree in marketing. So like I have my bachelor's in marketing.
So checks like, out.
Yes. And so like that's kind of like my background, like where it kind of started. I don't think like I really was taught in college like the modern marketing. I think it was more like the basics groundwork that I learned. And then I like started doing social media for my own business for fun. And I actually was working, so I mentioned this nonprofit I was working for. I was doing social media for them and just like seeing what worked, what didn't work, like trying a bunch of different strategies. And then at the same time, growing my own account personally. So I like really fell in love with social media. Honestly, like I would say that like the year after I fell in love with photography and started doing it was when I also discovered I really love social media too.
I feel like so many photographers are like, okay, we really love photography and I guess we've got to do this thing that's social media. But it almost seems like you kind of went into it backwards, where you already had this business degree, you had a really good grounding, you had a really good background. And, you know, despite the fact that like, I'm sure that most universities or media or business schools can't actually teach things in real time because social media is developing so fast that like even what you learned would have been somewhat obsolete by the time that you learned it. So I feel like a lot of that stuff you probably had to teach yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, honestly, a lot of it is like self-taught and like observation and just like refining and refining and refining. So posting, figuring out if it flops, why did it flop? I actually, this is so funny, I just thought of this, but when I was like 14, I was really into YouTube and I actually wasn't doing photography. I was doing like hair. So I did like hairstyling, but I was like so into YouTube and video creation. And honestly, I think that little part of my childhood really like led me into why I love social media today, because it's all like video and storytelling and tutorials. And I think that's where I like really started to like thrive in that area, was actually like as a wee teen, you know, doing social media and YouTube for fun.
Wow. You're so ahead of your time. I feel like,
oh, yeah,
I just like doing that on YouTube. You're like, yeah. No, but like doing that on YouTube, it feels like, yeah, that's a whole nother world. And to be doing that as a kid, were your parents just like, what was their response to you doing this? Is like, because I can just imagine as a parent, you're just like, okay, this is a new generation that I'm unfamiliar with.
Yeah, my parents have always been so supportive of literally anything I've done. Oh, it's so nice. And I've always been viewed as like the kind of creative, artistic child. I have like three sisters and we're all like so different, but I'm definitely like the creative one, I guess I could say. So my parents literally, like if I was filming a YouTube video, my mom would like make sure everyone was quiet. She'd like sit there and make sure like everything's going good. Like she was, yeah, she was really supportive and like never had any issues with her. And honestly, it was so helpful to have that support. I think sometimes like if you don't have the support from your friends and family, it does make like growing a business harder. Like it's just,
for sure,
it's a little bit discouraging, you know, if you don't have that. So I'm super thankful.
Yeah, totally. And I think there are a lot of parents who are just kind of like raising their kids a bit based on fear, where they're like, God, just do the thing that you know is going to lead to something that will like support you. And it takes so much risk taking to start a business. And so it's just, yeah, it's amazing that you had parents that were on board. You actually haven't completely left behind the hair tutorials. I feel like there are a few of those things and like nails and stuff that like,
yeah,
I love that
I actually really love that you kind of incorporate like your whole self. Like it's not like just this like segment. I don't know. I feel like that might be part of the reason that people can really relate to you is because it's not like segmented or you're not compartmentalizing your life. You're like, yeah, this is me.
Yeah, I think that's like such a huge lesson that I've learned in social media is being yourself. And like people can tell if you're not being true to who you are. If you're holding stuff back, like obviously there are some things to hold back, like don't overshare.
Yeah.
But like things that you love, like hobbies, whatever, like it's only going to strengthen your brand. Like if I followed someone and they were really into nails, if I wasn't really into nails, but like they also did photography, I would still be like, okay, like I support you, like because I like your account to begin with. And even though I'm not into nails necessarily, I like that you're just sharing things that you're passionate about. Like I think that's really valuable. Like a user, someone that consumes content on social media, I'm looking for people that are sharing hobbies and themselves, you know, it's just, it's huge.
Yeah, totally. I kind of want to loop back a little bit to you growing your social media and you kind of growing your following and like, you know, refining and going through this process of trial and error. Do you remember if there was a certain point when you really noticed your following gaining traction?
Yeah, totally. For me, it was when I started posting videos and it was specifically on TikTok. So my following started growing once I started posting TikToks, and I kind of like saw this trend where like videos were becoming a huge thing. So I got a lot of traction and following when TikTok was on the rise. So in 2020 was when I started posting a lot of videos. And at first I saw my TikTok following grow exponentially. And then slowly I started getting a lot of those people over from TikTok onto my Instagram, and started doing reels as well. So it was like, then Instagram kind of caught up with TikTok eventually. So that I would say that was the point where I started to notice my numbers going up and up. It really was a matter of like me switching from just like sharing surface level, like here's my clients and like, that's it, to me like sharing all areas of my life and not just like strictly client focused photography work, but I was, you know, experimenting in education and just like a bunch of different types of content is what I would put out. And I think at that point I was like hitting a bigger interest group, I guess. Like I was hitting more interests with multiple people. So my following was starting to grow because of that. And ultimately, like I was offering something of value, which is why the follower count started to go up.
Right. Yeah. Because you were creating content that was like relevant to so many different people. That's so interesting that there was like a overflow effect as well. So like once your following started growing on TikTok, that it kind of grew. I mean, it's not surprising, but it is interesting that there is like this kind of overflow. I guess this kind of leads me to my next question, where I'm wondering for like newbie photographers just starting out, like what's your advice for promoting their photography through social media? Like, should they be on like a variety of different platforms? Like how should these platforms like talk to each other? Like what are the best platforms to use for different things? Yeah. Like I know there's a lot of questions in there, but it's a big question.
When you're starting your social media journey and promoting a business, you can't view it like you are selling things. The minute you start to try to like sell to your audience is when people feel gross about it and then they peace out. So you really have to come from a place of like genuine, just like being genuine and like wanting to just genuinely provide value to people without anything in return. Okay. That's the first thing. Like, don't expect anything in return out of social media, and then it will. You know, it's like
then it's like will a catch 22. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly. For platforms, I typically recommend for photographers having at least two platforms that you pour the same amount of time and energy into. The reason being is you just want to, you know, put your eggs in multiple baskets in case, you know, Instagram decides that they don't want to be an app anymore. Like you'll have Pinterest or you'll have TikTok or Facebook. So it's good to use multiple platforms. But the other reason is because then you can push traffic from one platform to the other. So I was talking about how a lot of my TikTok followers went over and followed me on Instagram. I really do believe that there is a level of priority in who follows you on what platform. So I think Instagram is like the top level of commitment. Like if someone follows you on Instagram, they are a committed customer, I would say. Mm-hmm. But places like TikTok and Pinterest, I would say those are low level follows. It's really easy to follow someone and like they're not going to constantly be seeing your content. So it's like easy to kind of forget that you're following someone. So I do feel like TikTok and Pinterest is less of a commitment for followers. And then like, if you can direct them over to your Instagram, that's going to be a really good place to establish that like long-term customer to business relationship. So I personally love Pinterest. It's kind of like a low-key app that a lot of people don't think about anymore. But as photographers, it is literally built for us, specifically wedding photographers. Like it is built for people who are getting engaged or currently engaged.
Yeah,
so like,
true.
Yeah, it's literally like your clients are sitting ducks on the app. So I always tell people, like, if you're able to, you know, schedule out pins like months in advance and just like use location specific keywords on there and just like really target your location, eventually you will start to see bookings from that. So that's kind of my take on like the different platforms and everything. Did I answer all of your questions? Totally lost track.
No, that was all such valuable information. I'm like over here, like trying to take notes so that like I can like condense it all. Cause it's really kind of a bit of a quagmire. Like the internet is just like, kind of like people don't really know like what platform's best for what. And so that was definitely one of my questions. I do have a follow-up question, which is, what's the best way to engage your audience and how do you keep them engaged?
I think the best way is to provide value. You can do that in a lot of different ways. I try to do it in multiple forms. So I try to provide value in my video content. So in my reels, my TikToks, you know, I'm providing education. I am sharing my favorite products that I use. I'm sharing camera settings, you know, editing tips, like that is one way that I provide value. Another way is by blogging. So giving just free resources for your target audience to consume and kind of like directing people over there. So it's good to engage your audience by, you know, obviously creating videos and posts and stuff, but then directing them to your website through like the link in your bio or through links on your story. That's really going to keep them engaged and keep them hooked into your content because it's like they're going to an external source to hear more about what you're talking about. Like they are engaged at that point. So I think that's like another good strategy too, is just like direct them someplace else because that's going to like really hook them in.
True. And like, I guess, as you were saying before, like that kind of like channeling like people from different platforms, like from TikTok to Instagram and like to Pinterest, it kind of like grows your following like on each of those platforms.
It's also really good to like answer questions too, specifically if we're talking about video content. Like Reels and TikToks both allow you to reply to comments. And I feel like that's a really good way to keep your audience commenting on your stuff. Like if they see that you reply to comments, whether it's via video that you're replying or like physically typing out replies to your comments, like that is going to keep people engaged. You know, if you pin comments and stuff like that, it's just like rewarding your audience if they comment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And it makes sense because it's like they feel seen and they feel like you're actually listening to them.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's like a huge thing with engagement is like, I'm going to engage with an account that I feel like sees me. And, you know, even if it's as simple as like liking a comment, like that could make someone stay. Like you never know. So just like engaging with your audience like you want to be engaged with, you know?
How much time do you set aside for this stuff?
That's a good question. You're like, wow, that's really time consuming. It definitely is. So I kind of cheat a little bit and I have a virtual assistant who replies to a lot of stuff for me. But on TikTok, that is like the one app where I like 100% run it myself. And I, you know, it's just like, I would say like maybe 30 minutes a day I spend intentionally scrolling and finding like new ideas for videos. But I'm also like, you know, keeping up with my content and liking comments and responding to people, whatever. I would even say 30 minutes a day is like a long time. It's probably not that much. It's maybe like 15. Because, okay. You know, sometimes you do get lost in like the scroll and you get a little distracted.
Yeah. And it's like such a blurry line as well, where you're like intentionally scrolling and then you kind of like get down this little wormhole and then you're like, when did that, how long have I been here for? Like,
right. Yeah. You're like 2 hours later. Yeah. Is it still 2023?
Yeah. Exactly. So do you think that generally like new photographers should spend about 30 minutes a day like doing that kind of stuff, like scrolling and trying to find ideas, and like that's a good amount of time to set aside for that?
I would say that's like maybe a maximum. You could probably spend like 30 minutes twice a week. I would say it's much more doable than like 30 minutes a day, because it's like trends are like basically every 3 days, I feel like there's a new trend or like a new sound or whatever. God. So if you're able to like twice a week, just like catch up and be like, okay, what's trending? What did I miss? That's really like the bare minimum, I would say. But like for me, I am an active user on TikTok and Reels and Pinterest. So when I'm just like chilling and like scrolling for fun, I do sometimes like have random ideas and I'll just like save things. And so it doesn't have to be like time set aside if you don't want it to be, but it's definitely like better boundaries if you are able to set aside, you know, twice a week, 30 minutes or whatever.
Right. So you've got your time where you're like, I'm scrolling for fun. And then you've got your time where you're like, I'm scrolling for work.
Yes. Yeah. And it's usually like, if I know I'm recording videos, like let's say it's Tuesday, I'm recording videos, I'll scroll like in the morning and just try to figure out like, okay, like here are some ideas and like write them out and stuff. So I feel like it's usually like the day I'm recording is when I'm like doing those intentional scrolls.
Right. Right. And you have certain days that you set aside, like Tuesdays are your video days.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally varies per week just based on my schedule, but it is good to set aside. Like for me, it only takes about like 2 hours to get like, you know, all my stuff lined up. I'll do like 2 hours of like strict video content, whether it's content for me or brands or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's good to just like get out of the way, like do your makeup, like set up your tripod, your ring light, and just crank them out. So then you don't have to worry about it the rest of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And I noticed you use hashtags. Like how do you choose them?
It varies per app actually. So on TikTok, you only get like 5 or 6 hashtags. So I choose hashtags that are basically relevant to my video and relevant to my niche. So I'll do like 3 niche hashtags. So like, let's say I'm a wedding photographer that wants to book wedding clients. My niche hashtags would be like hashtag wedding photographer, hashtag Michigan. Okay. So those are like 3 just like niche, very generic hashtags. And then I'm going to like use hashtags to describe the video too. So let's say I posted a video about a first look. My other 3 hashtags would be hashtag first look, hashtag bridal portraits, you know, like stuff that's a little bit more specific to the video itself. On Instagram, I choose hashtags kind of similarly, but it's more so like I just have like 10 hashtags that I use for every single post. And then like the top 3 I usually used to like describe. So those kind of change every post and I'll describe the video or the post. But I find that on Instagram, it's really good to use location specific hashtags because a lot of clients on Instagram are looking at those hashtags. Like for me, I'm in Michigan, hashtag Michigan wedding photographer, every single post. Like it should be on every single post because a lot of people that are getting married in Michigan are looking at the hashtag. If they're not looking at the hashtag, they have content on their pages popping up with that hashtag that they're probably engaging with. Hmm. So like my content could be suggested for them eventually if they're engaging with posts within that hashtag.
How do you track like how much time you spent like, you know, cultivating this like world and social media and like how much that's actually led to like conversions?
Yeah. So I don't necessarily think, at least not that I know, I don't think you can track conversions based on hashtags. I've had a few people like tell me when they first reach out, I found you through like this hashtag, or like I saw your work through like my venue's hashtag. So, you know, occasionally someone will mention it. I think like as far as tracking conversions in general across social media, you just have to ask people when they reach out, like, how did you hear about me? And just track it from there.
Right.
I find that basically everyone that reaches out to me is from Instagram or TikTok. I think my conversions are like, you know, 60% of my inquiries are from Instagram, like 20% are from TikTok, and then the other 10% are random from like client, like word of mouth and like other like Google search. But for the most part, if you can keep track of those percentages, that's how you're going to know if what you're doing is paying off.
That's amazing. It sounds like what you're doing is definitely paying off.
This podcast is brought to you by the Unscripted Posing app, the one-stop shop photography app for photographers looking to up their posing game, streamline their business, and look and feel like a professional. With Unscripted, you'll confidently rock every shoot, capture those emotion-filled images you've been craving, and create a fun photo shoot experience for everyone, including you. Join over 200,000 photographers and search Unscripted in your app store now.
You can also track on Google Search Council as well. I think that's what it's called. It's like Google Business something where you can track like literally where your clicks come from. Like it's very, very simple and honestly so helpful. Because like if you have a blog that's popping off, or if you're like, I don't know, if you get a lot of inquiries from like a certain TikTok or whatever, like you'll be able to track that. And that's really helpful to know, because then you can pour your time and energy into more content like that. So you can, you know, keep rolling in the inquiries.
Yeah, totally. And then like you can kind of like have more time to do other things. Like, you know, that the time that you've spent doing that is like coming back to you, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like if you are spending like equal amounts of time on like all social media platforms, but you're getting inquiries from Instagram, like dump one of the platforms and double your time on Instagram, you know, like don't waste your time on other things that aren't working. Like just find what works and keep doing it.
Yeah, totally. Okay. And this next question might be a little bit of a silly one, but I do kind of want to drill into, you know, the difference between reels, stories, and posts on Instagram, and like how you should treat each of those things differently.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. So in my head, reels are for people that don't follow you. Feed posts are for people that do follow you, and stories are for people that really follow you and are really into your content. So you kind of have to treat them as such. So when you're making reels, think of it like most of the people that are going to see that reel don't follow you. They have no idea what your business is like. So you want to make sure you're kind of like making reels for dummies. Like you're saying like,
yeah,
I'm a photographer. Here's what I do. Here's my work. Your posts are definitely for the people that already follow you. So cater it as such. And then stories 100% are like, you know, only a certain percentage of your followers even see your stories. So like really make that like really focusing on creating a relationship with your current followers. It's not like stories are not going to reach people that don't follow you. So like you don't have to worry about like doing weird intros and stuff like that. Like that's definitely for reels. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Totally. So stories are kind of like a little bit more like intimate. Like posts are like for people that already know you, and reels you kind of have to assume that they know nothing.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. That's really helpful. And what are some of the benefits of having like a good handle on your social media presence? Like, you know, when you interact with so many different people, like I can imagine that there's just different dynamics that come up. And I'm wondering, like, in your experience, like, have you ever received any like difficult comments, and like, how do you handle them, like both professionally and personally?
Yeah. So at first, when I started doing social media and like really focusing in on it, I would get comments that I would call them troll comments or difficult comments. The first thing I would do is I would go to see if they even followed me. You know, if it's someone that does follow me, I'm like, okay, like I'm going to take your comment a little bit more seriously. Like, you know, because you're following me and like you care. But if someone doesn't follow me and they're commenting and like being difficult, honestly, at this point, I ignore them. Or sometimes I like laugh about it, 'cause I'm like, bro, like, it's the internet. Like, why are we trolling right now? Sometimes I do respond though, but I always try to respond with like, just like the most grace and just being kind. You just never know like what someone's day is like, or what like prompted them to lash out. You know, most of the time I feel like difficult comments are like a reflection of just like someone's own problems and what they're going through. So I just like try to be kind if I do respond. Most of the time, if it's like a comment that's just like hating on me, I won't respond. If it's a comment that's kind of challenging what I'm talking about, I do think that it's good to have those conversations. So I try to respond to comments if it's like, hey, let's discuss this point. If you like agree, disagree, really is just more about mindset at this point. But I will say, like, when I first started social media, I really let comments get to my head and like was always really discouraged and would let it ruin my entire day. But now it's like you just can't let that happen. I think like one of the main reasons that like I've grown so much is because I haven't let that type of stuff get to me. And it's funny, I actually just got this comment on one of my YouTube shorts actually. And it was just like commenting on my appearance, which is just not cool.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, okay, like I'm a little sad. And like, I gave it like, you know, 10 seconds. I was like, I'm going to give this 10 seconds. I'm going to let it hurt for 10 seconds. And I was like, okay, I'm over it. Like, let's move on. I think if I would have seen that comment like a year ago, I probably would have had a different reaction. So if you're going to like really get into social media, you kind of have to put your blinders up. And there comes a point where you like really can't read comments sometimes, or like maybe hire a virtual assistant to help you respond to comments that are like helpful, difficult comments and not comments that are literally just hurtful.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely like, you kind of need to develop a thicker skin. And I always find it really strange when people are really mean online. And it kind of reminds me of when people get road rage. Like, it's similar because like you're in this little like, you know, box of a car where you're separated from other people. And like, I don't know, like when we bump into each other in the street, we have all these really lovely social ways of like being able to deal with it, you know, where you're like, oh no, you're going this way. Oh, I'll go this way. Oh, we're dancing now, you know, and like, it's just sweet and lovely. Whereas like when you're in a car and like someone does something, you're like, you know, fly into a hot rage. And I think it's the same online. Like you're really socially uninhibited because people don't actually get to see like the person behind like the facade on the internet, you know? And so I think we're less likely to be kind to each other. So I don't know. I just think it's really awesome that like that's sort of part of your core philosophy, that like you always try and respond with kindness and like give people the benefit of the doubt and say,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what kind of day this person's been having, but I'm not going to engage if it's like just mean. But being willing to like have the conversation if it does seem like an interesting like sort of opportunity to like learn from each other by like challenging each other.
Yeah, I think like that's such a big mindset that's so important to have on social media. It's just like the willingness to learn and grow. So like if you do post something and like let's say you did make a mistake, maybe you shouldn't have posted it, you shouldn't have said something or whatever. The difference between someone that like is approaching social media in the right way and the wrong way is like one person's going to learn from that and grow, and the other person's going to let it just like completely shut them down and like they're in it for the wrong reasons, you know? And I think like when you're on social media, the most controversial posts are the ones that go viral and do lead to more hurtful comments. And like, like with views comes hurt people and hurt comments because you're reaching more people. I like your analogy of like being in the car, because I think like in the car, everything is just more annoying. Like on the internet, everything is just more irritating. But then like you'll, like when I'm driving, I will come across like the sweetest people who like, you know, just wave you on or just like, I don't know, like just people that are nice and literally just see you as a human and not as like another car on the road. And I think in the same way, like we have to view everyone on social media as another human and not like, oh, just another account that has followers or is trying to get followers. Like there's a human behind every account. So just like kind of keeping that in mind is huge if you're going to get started in social media.
Totally. And just like to know that like everyone kind of riles everyone up a little bit. And so like some people just kind of like, as you're saying, like these things that just go viral. And like once it starts, it's just this like crazy snowball effect. I always wonder what would happen if like someone did this like really nasty comment and like you had their phone number somehow magically and you just called them and you're like, hey, I just wanted to call about this. Like, I think most people would be like, you know, don't worry about it. Like, it's,
yes,
you yeah. know, because I think people are emboldened by this like anonymity.
Yeah. It's funny. I think I saw a TikTok of, I don't know if you know who Trisha Paytas is. Mm-mm. Okay. She is like such like on the internet, she is such like a controversial person. Like, I feel like a lot of people either really hate her or really like her, but she did an interview and she was getting asked about like the hate that she got on the internet and stuff. And she literally said like, she's never had in-person hate. She's never had someone come up to her in person and say like, you're ugly, you're bad at what you do. It's only ever been on the internet. Like, and she's been in the industry like for years, like, you know, decades. And so it's like, it's really just like people hiding behind the screen. Like you said, like totally. No one's really going to say this stuff to your face. So you just have to take it with a grain of salt, maybe learn from it and move on or ignore it, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. You do. Yeah. You. Yeah. And I think like over time, like it is possible to develop a thicker skin, but like, as you said, like good as well to have sort of boundaries around what you reply to, what you engage with, what you decide to just sort of like pass by. And like, if it really is difficult, like, and you have the capacity to be able to do so, like hiring a virtual assistant to like mm-hmm. reply to those things.
Yeah.
I'm going to pivot a little bit here because I want to ask you about like, what does your social media strategy look like? And I think we've probably touched on it. And, you know, you sort of mentioned like how much time you spend per day or per week on it, but just a sort of like broad overview of like, what is it? Yeah. What does it look like if you had to explain it to someone who is just getting into social media?
Yeah. So my strategy is to basically post the perfect amount that the app wants me to post. So on Instagram, it's daily for Reels. TikTok, it's multiple times per day. So that's kind of my goal. And within my strategy, I have like these different pillars and these different topics that I like to talk about. So I have entertaining posts, I have educational posts, I have relatable posts and inspirational. So there's kind of those different pillars that I follow. And then within each of those categories, I know different topics that really hit home for my audience. So for example, like for my relatable posts, like I always talk about how I'm an overshooter and I take way too many photos and it resonates with a lot of people. So for me, that's one of the things that if I'm trying to figure out, okay, like here's a sound on TikTok, it's trending, I'm going to go over to my topics and figure out like, okay, this would be great for a relatable post. I'm going to make this one about overshooting. So that's kind of my strategy when I'm thinking about like, what content am I making? I have posted enough videos where I can kind of narrow it down and figure out what my audience likes. If you're at a point where you don't know what your audience likes, you need to start experimenting with different types of content and literally being like, this one performed well, why? This one flopped, why? And figuring out the type of videos that your audience likes, the posts, like all of that different stuff, and then make note of all of that. That's going to be your strategy. I like to post every single day and I usually post at like 11:30 because my audience is most active at noon on both platforms, TikTok and Instagram. So I post at 11:30 every single day and I basically batch content a lot. If there's a trend and I see it's trending like currently, I will film it that same day and post it that same day. I will batch a lot of original audios. So if I, you know, have a lull and there's not really any trends going on, I'll batch a bunch of educational reels or a bunch of inspirational things of me talking with original audio. So it's not like trend specific. It's literally like I can post them whenever I want to. So those are kind of like buffer posts. And then I like to use my trend posts as like opportunities to reach people that don't follow me. So I would say that's pretty much a summary of my strategy. It's a lot of just like making videos on the fly and batching content and knowing like per day I need to post, you know, 5 to 10 stories. I need one feed post a week. I need 7 videos a week. And then per platform, what do I need to create? And then every single day I'm either posting or I have a day that's dedicated to creating content. So that way I'm not like overwhelmed. And I usually try to plan my content during the week so that on film day, I'm ready to go.
Right. So when you say you batch content, that means like you're recording like everything around the same time. So you're not like doing bits and pieces.
Yes. Yeah. If anyone goes and like looks at my social media, you'll notice a lot of my videos, I'll be wearing the same outfits.
I was just going to ask this question. I was like, do you change outfits in between each thing?
You can. I mean, I used to, but now I'm like, who cares?
No,
like,
one probably notices.
Yeah. And if it's a cute enough outfit, like make it last a week. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Like show it off.
Totally. Get some mileage out of it.
Yes, exactly. It does depend though. Like if you want to change or not change, it's kind of whatever.
Okay, cool. That's so helpful. I feel like I need to listen to that again and just like pull out like how many reels and how, yeah, I feel like it's just like a lot there. It's also amazing that you're able to just like recite what your social media strategy is.
Thanks. Really, I mean, impressed. I've been doing it for like 2 years at this point. I don't think I've missed a day of posting a TikTok in like 2 years. Maybe I've missed like one or two, but like once you get in the flow, it is so much easier to maintain than to start. I think like when people are starting social media, they're so overwhelmed and rightfully so. But the hardest part is literally posting your first video or post and getting started. That's mm-hmm. the hardest part. Once you do it, maintaining it for me is the easiest because I love creating content, but it's like getting over the fear of like putting yourself out there. That's the main thing. That's the hardest thing, honestly.
Do you use any apps to sort of post things for you, or do you manually post everything yourself?
I manually post everything except for Pinterest. My virtual assistant uses Tailwind, which is great for Pinterest, but TikTok has like scheduling tools within TikTok on desktop. So if you're someone that really does need to like schedule things in advance, you can like do that on the TikTok desktop. And then I do believe you can like schedule, I don't know if you can schedule videos. Yeah, I think you can on Instagram through Facebook scheduler, I think. Don't quote me.
Cool. But you like just kind of doing it manually mostly.
Yeah, I don't think there's another option. Like if there were another option, I would totally do it, but I don't think there is.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm totally the type of person that's like, let's schedule it. Let's get it on the calendar. But yeah, it's just not an option right now. That's why I post everything at 11:30. Like I drop everything at 11:30, I post.
And do you stay online for a little bit afterwards so that like if people reply, like you're able to like be there, or do you just kind of like reply like throughout the day?
Yeah. I think it kind of depends on if I'm busy or not.
Yeah.
Cool. I do like to see like within the first 10 minutes what the reaction is. Cause if it's like a negative reaction, then I'll be like, oh, maybe I should, you know, get rid of this. But I mean, it is good to get the reaction. And I do like to reply to comments within like the first like 5 or 10 minutes. I am replying to comments right as they come in. So yeah, I would say staying online, you know, just a couple minutes after is good just to see how things perform and everything.
Yeah, cool. As service-based businesses, I feel like we've kind of touched on this, but like a lot of what we're told to do is to put ourselves out there and like sort of lead with personality so that our clients like know who we are and who they're working with. But I saw one of your posts about how like you sort of identify yourself as an introvert. And that's definitely not something that I would have picked up on based mm-hmm. on like your social media presence. And I guess I'm just curious about that. Like, how do you manage like such a forward-facing social media like personality and like still like, do you have this like massive hangover afterwards where you're like, whew, like I gotta go and be by myself in a dark room for a little while? Like, how do you balance those things?
Yeah, there is a part of me that loves like, I do like being around people, but I think at the end of the day, I do need to be by myself and like just chill. So for me, the social media part of it is being around people. So I kind of view like on social media, like it's being in front of an audience. Like there's a group of people, you're at a conference, whatever. Like that's kind of the vibe on social media. So I think like if you're the type of person that struggles with that and like needs to know like this is my time to post and to be social and then like I need time to myself, like I would say that's normal and you kind of have to set those boundaries. And like for me, I feel when I'm like on the brink of burnout, you know, I'm like, ooh, yeah, like I'm tired. Like, so a lot of the times for me, it's the weekend. Like on Friday, I'm like, man, I've been busting my butt all week. Like I am just like tired. So sometimes I don't like post reels on the weekend because I'm like, you know what? I'm taking my time and I'm sleeping in and I'm doing things that social media doesn't need to know about. I'm spending time with my husband, my dog, my family, you know, and I think like there are some things that social media that are great to share on social media, but other things you can totally keep to yourself. There are so many aspects of my life that I don't share on there just because I like to have something to myself that's like just mine, especially when it comes to relationships. So I think like you kind of have to identify each moment in your life. Like, okay, I'm going on a date. Do I need to post about this or should I just like, you know, leave it to myself? And that'll help you stay energized as well. Kind of keeping some things and picking and choosing what you want to put out there. Did that answer your question? I feel like okay.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I mean, I feel like it's interesting as well that like, you have this sort of almost like intentional practice around it where you ask yourself, like, is this something I need to post about? And I can imagine that that would have, taken a little while to hone or like taken a little bit of thinking about to actually like get to that point. Because I think when you're so in the mindset of like share, 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 like post, 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 like everything sort of becomes like swept up in the flurry of it.
Yeah, it's true. There's good stuff to share and there's stuff that's gonna just like, it's good to share, but other stuff is like gonna burn you out if you share it. And I think like for me, it's a lot of it is like my family. Like I'm choosing to social media, but my family's not. And so you kind of have to be respectful of mainly like the people around you. A lot of my social media you'll find is a lot of me and occasionally the people that I'm with and like, you know, my husband sometimes too, but like I'm the one that is choosing this and the people in my life aren't choosing to blast their life. So it's being respectful as well. And, you know, setting those boundaries. If you are an introvert, like set up the boundaries, because I think like at the end of the day, everyone on social media has to be an extrovert. Like it's like you have an extroverted personality on social media, but like that's kind of what you have to do. Even if you are an introvert, you have to be an extrovert and post yourself. Like the act of you posting yourself is an extroverted act. So you kind of have to like just like adapt into that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting point. How like just like the very act of like putting something out there is sort of like an extroverted like thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find your way to education?
So I mentioned at the very beginning of the episode that I was working for a nonprofit and doing their photography, right? While I was doing weddings.
Yeah.
While I was doing that, I was leading a team of photographers that they had. So I started by being on the team and then I got promoted to leading the team of photographers. And these photographers that would come on the team would be basically like little to no knowledge on photography. So I very early on in my photography career was teaching people how to do photography. Even though I didn't really know what I was doing, I kind of was thrown into this role where I had to teach people. And then once 2020 came and I was like starting my own business, I literally just started posting educational TikToks. And I discovered that a lot of my traction was not necessarily my client work, but my education work. So for me, it was like, okay, like this is something that people are genuinely interested in. Feels like it's kind of lacking on TikTok. There's not a lot of photography education here. So I just started blasting photography education on TikTok. And at that point, I was like, if I'm going to be doing this, I want to have something where people can buy something from me. If they want to keep learning from me, they have an option to buy from me because you know, I just want to make $20 off of this, right? So I started like creating a few very low-end products, not low-end, but low-cost products.
Yeah.
And a few freebies and started experimenting with like having a shop and stuff. And I think at that point, I really found my way into like the education space of like teaching people via video and courses and templates and like selling things like that were for photographers. So that's kind of what led me there. And I feel like I wouldn't have got there, honestly, if I hadn't had that experience where I was thrown into a teaching position at the nonprofit. So it's funny how like the things that you don't expect to help you and seem kind of like a just like a negative thing at the time really do impact and help you in the future. You just don't see it yet. So that's kind of how it was for me.
Is that kind of what led you to starting a podcast?
Yeah, I would say so. I always feel like I have more to say. Like, you know, like I'm like, I need to keep talking. Like I have a lot to say. And I felt like my 30-second videos, I just couldn't thoroughly explain what I wanted to. And I did want to have like a free form of content where I could really create community and establish relationships with the people that were following me. So that's why I started a podcast, because I had this, you know, big following on Instagram and TikTok, but I was like, I really want like a community. And that was where I really feel like I was able to create the community and like lifelong followers, customers, like lifelong, honestly, friends, like I feel like have become a part of the podcast, you know, like, so that was all like what led me to starting it.
It's cool as well because you get to reach out to people that you really admire and like pick their brains about things that like you're interested in too.
Oh yeah. I feel like my podcast is just a reflection of my brain and like the questions that I have. Like it is so like specific to me and I'm like, I just hope that people relate to this, you know? And I think like that's the cool thing about a podcast or like just starting anything. If you start social media, whatever, it's completely unique to you. And like, it's not going to be the same as everyone else's because you are unique. And I love interviewing people. And I feel like that's a really cool part of podcasts is just like diving into your own interests and seeing like what other professionals have to say about it and like picking other people's brains. Yeah. It's so
fun. And you're kind of like legitimized by this platform. Like you all of a sudden just like have a little bit of authority and you're like, I can ask you any question I want.
Right. And you're like, this is my podcast. I can literally do whatever I want. I could play music right now. And like it's whatever. It's my podcast.
Yeah, totally. So did it kind of just like grow naturally or did you sort of, like obviously like being the social media whiz that you are, I'm sure that like you did a bunch of things to sort of invest in its growth. I'm wondering what they are.
So my podcast kind of like jumped in listens and downloads around the same time, coincidentally, that I posted a TikTok about my podcast. Right. So I do feel like it has grown because of a lot of like advertising it through TikTok, Reels, whatever. You kind of just have to have the mindset of like, you can't expect people to know what you offer if you don't say that you offer it. Yeah. So that's kind of my perspective on like my podcast is like, I offer it and I want other people to know that it's a part of my brand and it's a part of the free education that I provide. So I did TikToks, I've done Reels, I post about it on my stories and I feel like a lot of it actually is word of mouth at this point, because once you get those loyal listeners that really love your content, they're going to go tell all their friends about it. I'm like that with the podcast I listen to. Yeah. Like I am always telling people like, go listen to this or this. I'm obsessed with this. And I'm always like so willing to give recommendations. And I feel like that's how people feel about podcasts. And I think my podcast as well, like has been referred to other people at this point. And that's kind of how it started to grow as well.
Now I'm curious about what some of your favorite podcasts are.
Oh, I so many. I am a true crime person.
Oh, you're yes.
I am, but I'm not like, I'm not that intense. Okay. Like I'm not like falling asleep to murder stories. Okay. That's not like how I am. I like true crime, but I also like business podcasts and I'm a little bit of a girly girl. So there's like this girly podcast I listen to. So I love Murder with My Husband is a really good podcast, like murder podcast that I've stuck with for the whole time it's been on. There's a kind of like a girl focused podcast called What We Said. That's like my favorite podcast ever.
Okay.
And cool. Then there's a business podcast called My First Million. And they, I think, post episodes like multiple times a week.
Wow.
And interview a lot of really cool people. So that's kind of like a fun one to put on in the background while you're like doing stuff. They have a lot of content. So it's a little overwhelming, but honestly, like I just love to like learn whenever I can. So it's like one of those that you put on in the background.
Yeah. And it's just amazing to just like have access to so many different stories and so many different people's like points of view. And like, you know, I think everyone's sort of got to wherever they are in a really roundabout way. I mean, even just like having this conversation with you, like, I feel like there are so many points in your life that sort of like unexpectedly led to this thing that then like led to the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I feel curious to ask you about any stories that you could share about when everything just went really wrong for you during a shoot or a workshop or online and like what you learned from it.
So the first thing that pops into my head is a wedding that I shot where I missed the first kiss and my second shooter did not get like a good angle either. So that was a really good learning opportunity for me. I learned that you really need to keep your camera up and ready at all moments in time, especially if you're shooting a wedding. I learned the importance of like, you know, not needing to switch your lens all the time. And like, especially if it's during like a ceremony or something, like just kind of be content with what you have. Like, I feel like I'm always like so excited for the next thing, the next lens switch, the next lighting scenario, but like just kind of taking the moment there, because if you're like, I was literally switching a lens while I missed the first kiss.
Oh.
And it was like, I could have just kept the lens that I had on and I wouldn't have missed it. I did end up photoshopping the first kiss.
What?
And it turned out really good. And literally I showed it to many, many people and they all were like, I couldn't even tell. So,
oh my God, you fully just like MacGyvered yourself out of that situation.
I did. I did. I'm not proud of it. And
I'm impressed.
I cannot disclose any more information about it, but it was a very good learning opportunity for me. And I think we all have those like random mistakes that we've made.
Oh my gosh.
And you learn and grow. That's
especially,
what life is.
Especially at weddings. Like, I feel like there's so many opportunities to mess up.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many moments that like you're really meant to get, and like this is the pivotal moment, you have to capture this. Like, it's like every single moment at a wedding is like a thing that you need to capture. And so it's just like really easy to just, I don't know, shit happens, like lose a memory card, like I don't know, things get stolen, like you be changing a lens. Like, I just think, that stuff happens, but it is like, a good opportunity to learn from it.
Yes. There's just a lot of variables in photography. Some of them are out of your control. So if it happens to you, it's fine. It literally happens to everyone.
Man, this has been such an amazing conversation. I'm slowly starting to wrap up here, but I'm just wondering, is there anything I haven't asked you yet that you'd like to talk about?
Honestly, no. I feel like I talked my brains out about social media and I'm like, I feel like anything else I'd have to say, you guys would be like, no, duh. Like, come on, you already talked about that. So no, like this was a great interview. And it was so great to talk with you. This was like literally so fun. Like
so fun. I've learned so much. I feel like I need to like sit down and just like brain dump everything that you've just said. So I can't wait to share this value with our listeners. And thank you so much for coming on board.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Approaching the wild world of social media can feel like a chore at times. And with new trends, algorithms, and platforms changing all the time, it can be really challenging to keep up. So take these tips from someone who's basically seen it all and apply them to your own social media strategy. There were so many key takeaways that it was hard to choose which ones to highlight, but here are three that really stood out to me. Engage your audience by providing value. Cassidy covers education, camera settings, and posts blogs with free resources. I guess the catch-22 of this is that this is the kind of content you create without expecting anything in return. You will likely get lots in return, but it's most effective if you create it with the intention of genuinely wanting to help people. Then experiment with different types of content. Take notes on what time you posted something, what kind of content it was, what went well, what flopped, and start to gather information on what kind of stuff gets traction on your feed. Another thing she said was to create some pillars for your social media posts so you know you're posting things that are relevant to a wider audience. Cassidy's pillars were entertaining posts, educational posts, relatable posts, and aspirational posts. Setting up pillars for yourself also means that you're not having to reinvent the wheel every time you post. They function as a means to jog your inspiration and help you generate ideas without having to injure your brain every time. With pretty much every photographer depending on social media to book clients, it's an unavoidable part of growing your business. With these tips, you'll have all the tools you need to succeed online and off. Don't forget to check out Cassidy's podcast, Oh Shoot, for photography and business tips to help you on your journey. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next time.
This podcast was created on the unceded land of the Bundjalung people, and we pay our respects to elders past, emerging, and present.